This is The Guardian.
Today, a secret deal to give Australia nuclear submarines and a shot across the bow at China. Deep below the surface of international affairs, something's been lurking, very quietly.
It's a great pleasure, Mr. President, to welcome you to Cornwall.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
Fantastic to see you.
The first sort of perhaps hint that something was afoot was at the G7 in Cornwall. Scott Morrison, the Australian Prime Minister, had been invited. Australia's not part of the G7. And he had a meeting with President Biden. But the surprise was that Boris Johnson turned up.
And the US leader, that would have been their first meeting.
And suddenly what was supposed to be a tete-a-tete was a three-way meeting.
We're not quite sure the reason for that, but nevertheless that meeting went ahead a short time ago.
And there was some criticism for Scott Morrison in the press. How comes he can't go and meet the US president on his own? What's all that about? It's a bit of an insult. Well, what in fact was going on was the three of them were talking about coming together. All this is going on in great secrecy. Then suddenly on Wednesday, we get this burst of activity and speculation starting in Australia, where there's going to be an announcement, the White House doing an announcement, 10 p.m. on Wednesday night, London time, 5 p.m. US time.
Well, good morning from Australia. I'm very pleased to join two great friends of freedom and of Australia, Prime Minister Johnson and President Biden. Today, we join our nations in a next generation partnership.
You've got these three separate countries all coming together and suddenly saying, hey, to the world, we've got this defence agreement.
And the first task of this partnership will be to help Australia acquire a fleet of nuclear powered submarines, emphasising, of course.
You didn't know anything about it, but we're announcing it right now, and we're coming together to work together on nuclear powered submarines. And what's become known as AUKUS. And everyone else was stunned. No other country saw it coming.
That's AUKUS, like Australia, UK, US. An agreement that could shape foreign policy in the three countries for generations, even if the details, including the names of the leaders involved, aren't clear to everybody.
And I want to thank that fellow down under. Thank you very much, pal. Appreciate it, Mr. Prime Minister.
It's a nuclear submarine deal. And a message to China. The US isn't leaving East Asia without a fight. And they just might get one, starting with France. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in focus, the nuclear fallout from a defence pact aimed at pushing back Beijing. Dan Sabber, you're The Guardian's defence and security editor, so you're the right person to ask this very simple question. AUKUS, AUKUS, what is this monstrous acronym they've unleashed on us?
These things always come in with these kind of acronyms. The politicians love this. But look, this is a sort of symbolic of this Anglosphere closeness that the three leaders want to project. And I think it's no surprise that Boris Johnson and Scott Morrison want to be close to the United States. The surprise is that Joe Biden has so willingly embraced this and is so enthusiastically wanting to help the Australians acquire this nuclear power technology, something the Americans only done once before in history with the Brits in 1958.
Okay, and to be clear, it's pronounced AUKUS, is that right?
It rhymes with raucous, yes.
Okay. For something this remarkable, I'm surprised that it was kept secret for so long. How did they manage to do that?
18 months ago, Australia was conducting a review of its submarine technology. It really wanted nuclear power subs. These nuclear secrets are held incredibly close, and a tiny number of people in Australia were looking at this and reviewing the decision. And Australia spent a year reviewing it. And crucially, Scott Morrison waited for Donald Trump to come out of the White House, and he waited for Joe Biden to come in. He didn't even want to approach the Americans. And then Australia, in very small numbers, approached the Brits. They approached the British in March this year, and conversation started with Scott Morrison and Boris Johnson. Again, a very, very small number of people. This is just super secret stuff, and the people involved treat it incredibly seriously. And it was then and only then that the conversations with the Americans began, and that led up to the meeting and the conversations at the G7 in Cornwall.
Just going through the press releases about this, one phrase keeps coming up, which is stability in the Indo-Pacific.
Our world is becoming more complex, especially here in our region, the Indo-Pacific.
To preserve security and stability in the Indo-Pacific. Pacific.
Because we all recognize the imperative of ensuring peace and stability in the Indo-Pacific over the long term.
What exactly does that mean?
All three leaders were great pains to say that this is not about China, it's not about any other country, all that. Absolutely nobody buys that, okay? China's economy is growing incredibly fast. It's also growing militarily. A couple of years ago, it overtook the US to have the world's largest navy. Yeah, the point's not lost on the Pentagon, and the Pentagon itself has issued reports acknowledging this. China has got a kind of an expansionist mindset, you know, in various parts of the Pacific, in particularly the South China Sea and in the East China Sea, and it's in its near abroad, if you like. There are these sort of small rocky islands like the Spratly Islands, the Paracel Islands, tiny islands on which China has built military bases. It's all about expanding its territorial claim into the Pacific. And the Americans really don't like this. They're worried about this. But also other countries nearby are worried about this. Japan, but most obviously Taiwan, which China does not recognize as an independent country, whose independence the US effectively guarantees because the US supplies it arms. So there's growing points of tension across the maritime region, and the US is on guard to respond.
Pretty striking then, if this is all about China, that was the one word that didn't come up in the press conference.
This is diplomacy, right? And everyone is trying to be very careful about China. Ideally, the West does not want an adversarial relationship with China because there's too much at stake. You know, China's seen through that. Its foreign ministry spokesperson within hours is talking, you know, accusing the powers engaging in a obsolete Cold War mentality, a kind of zero-sum game of politics. But the three leaders are still saying is, oh, don't worry, it's fine, it's not a big deal, we're sharing a bit of technology, it's just, you know, starting with nuclear subs. When you, however, look under the covers and you start talking to national security types in the countries, all of them will say, this is really significant. This is one of the most significant defence agreements ever struck.
And what does AUKUS, this tripartite defence deal, as they've called it, actually commit its members to doing on paper?
Well, that's a very interesting question. There's two parts to it on paper, and possibly a third. It's a defence technology sharing deal, and the first part is clear, which is Australia's going to be given the technology to have nuclear-powered submarines. The second part will be to share future technologies down the line. There's talk about artificial intelligence. There's a lot of concern actually about securing undersea cables. There's a real worry that maybe the Russians or the Chinese could cut off the internet across the Pacific or Atlantic or some such. So there's going to be some activity, for example, around there. But the question is there a third part? And the third part would be, is there going to be an obligation for a country like Britain, which is not a Pacific power and hasn't been historically since the end of empire? Are there going to be obligations for Britain to get much more involved militarily in places like the South China Sea, helping the Americans, helping the Australians? What if the Taiwan situation, you know, tips over into a real crisis? What if there's a real military threat from China? You know, will the Americans step up? Will the Americans want allies in that process? That was a question being asked in the House of Commons by former British Prime Minister Theresa May to her successor Boris Johnson.
Mr. Speaker, my right honourable friend said yesterday that this partnership has the aim of working hand in glove to preserve security and stability in the Indo-Pacific. Can I ask my right honourable friend, what are the implications of this pact for the stance that would be taken by the United Kingdom for its response should China attempt to invade Taiwan?
Mr. Speaker, the United Kingdom remains determined to defend international law, and that is the strong advice we would give to our friends across the world, and the strong advice that we would give to the government in Beijing.
So the big unknown here is what else flows from it. And it was very interesting that American officials, in their briefings on Wednesday, they were talking about this as a sort of a down payment on global Britain, yeah? This is global Britain is Boris Johnson's big slogan. This is how he wants Britain to position itself after Brexit. Some say, what does it mean? Well, here's an example of what it might mean. The Americans are saying, yeah, okay, we're helping out with this technology. The benefit for Britain is it will supply some to Australia and create jobs. But there's going to be something in return. They don't spell out what it is, and that's the big question.
Okay, and the centrepiece, the first announcement of this alliance, is these nuclear submarines you've mentioned that Australia is going to get with UK and US help. Tell me about these submarines.
So submarines are traditionally powered by diesel engines, but diesel engines are noisy or relatively noisy, and the subs just aren't quite as good. They can't submerge underwater as long. Nuclear power technology is a step change in this respect. It allows submarines to submerge for 3, 4, 5 months at a time. So it all becomes about your limitations, how much food you can take with you. And they're much, much harder to detect, which means that they can operate silently and secretly in a whole range of waters around the world. So there are only 6 countries in the world that currently have nuclear-powered submarines. The US, Britain, Russia, China, France, and India is the 6th. Australia would therefore only become the 7th. But the big difference with Australia is Australia doesn't have its own nuclear industry, nuclear power, nuclear weapons. So Australia will be the first country to acquire nuclear submarine technology without having the indigenous nuclear industry to go with it. So that's a big step change.
And why does Australia want them, these submarines?
The Pacific is a big place. You need to range many, many miles in the Pacific. There's just a nervousness about China, and it's about being on a level with China. And, you know, in a naval mindset, you're sitting there, Australia's a huge country with a huge coast, with a huge coastline, and you want to be able to ensure that you've got some capacity, you know, to defend it against attack, however unlikely that sounds.
Okay, to be really clear, these nuclear submarines will be armed with weapons like missiles, but they won't be nuclear weapons, right?
The kind of submarines we're talking about is important here. This is not nuclear weapons. These are not Trident nuclear armed submarines. What Australia is looking at are what are known as attack submarines. Well, it's pretty clear what they can do. This is about, you know, preventing other people's submarines potentially attacking you. So in order to power a nuclear submarine, you need effectively a mini nuclear reactor on board. Yeah, this is like a small nuclear power station. Okay, so this is a really serious engineering undertaking to come up with something like that. The British and American design uses highly enriched uranium. That's weapons grade uranium to you and I. So this is super important sensitive technology. It will be supplied. We don't quite know how, by the Americans, by some combination of the Americans and Brits, who will effectively ship over a kind of power unit. I mean, it's clearly much more complicated than that, but effectively ship over a power unit to Adelaide, where the submarines will ultimately be assembled and built. The question kind of is this will be the first, you know, with all that nuclear material on board, will it be able to be kept safe? How will it be decommissioned? It gets Australia's fingers on the sort of edges of nuclear technology for the first time. You know, is that the beginning of a road down towards something like nuclear weapons? That's a big question.
But Dan, even with the submarines, Australia isn't going to have the capacity to win a war with China. I mean, it's a nightmare scenario, but is this basically about locking in Australia and maybe the UK as partners in some future US conflict with Beijing?
Absolutely. This is about the US coming together and looking for allies in the Asia-Pacific region. And Joe Biden is incredibly switched on to this. And I think one of the things that British officials were saying behind the scenes is, you know, remember we've had this incredibly choppy summer. The Afghanistan, you know, Biden withdrew US troops from Afghanistan. Relations between, for example, the US and the UK over that were really strained. Britain didn't want to leave Afghanistan. So that's been a really difficult area. But when it comes to the Pacific and discussions about relating to China, Joe Biden's fully engaged. He's leaning in. He wants a deal, right? So when this came to the Americans' table, the Americans were really prepared to help. Why? Because in the end, they want Australian boats and British boats, Japanese boats, Indian boats, you know, any number of other naval powers in the region, all ready to form a multinational force if it's necessary to deter China. Last month, there were exercises going on in the Philippine Sea involving Britain's new Queen Elizabeth aircraft carrier, you know, Americans, Australians, all the rest, multinational exercises, just to show that, you know, a bunch of sort of democratic allies can work together and respond effectively if China wants to flex its muscles.
And there was a degree of double-crossing in this deal, right? Because Australia was actually working on a 50 billion euro submarine deal with the French, which was a troubled deal. I read that the French and the Australian teams had some cultural clashes. Apparently the Aussies couldn't understand why the French insisted on taking a one-hour lunch break. But anyway, the French are clearly very unhappy about this.
How did you find out that the submarine contract had been scrapped?
Like everybody, thanks to the Australian press.
So no call? No call from the government?
No call to me.
So far, we've seen that they've recalled ambassadors from the US and Australia. They've cancelled a gala in Washington. and pulled out of a UK defence meeting. Are they right to be so annoyed?
What Australia had been pursuing was an upgrade to its existing diesel-powered fleet. It had signed, this deal that you describe, $90 billion Australian dollars, so yeah, €50 billion, with a French contractor, massive export deal for France to supply submarine technology to Australia. The French also didn't see this coming. The French knew nothing about this. However, everybody did know the contract was troubled. Everyone knew it wasn't quite working out as hoped. And the Australians had thought on more than one occasion in the past about switching, making the big step change to nuclear. The French feel really betrayed, and there's been some real strong rhetoric from their foreign minister in describing it, you know, none too subtly, as a stab in the back.
C'est vraiment en bon français un coup dans le dos.
And there has been certain amounts of, certainly the British have been saying, look, we understand why they're upset. This is a sort of, there's a matter of pride here. But, you know, France, Britain, America are all on the same side. The dispute might be economic in one sense, but it is a bit uncomfortable. These are all meant to be NATO out. They're all meant to be NATO allies here. And I think, you know, France being left out in the cold, this comes after Brexit, of course, and the rupture between the UK and Europe. We've seen tension between Britain and France over small matters like fishing rights. So the relationship between Britain and France is already a bit sour. And suddenly for Australia and France to fall out over this big contract, well, it's all starting to look like, you know, a pattern of events here. And it is a bit troubling because in the end, you know, France is one of the other, you know, after the US, you know, the UK and France are two of the most military capable countries in NATO. And you really want, you know, Britain and France to be working, you know, effectively together on military challenges.
Coming up, does the AUKUS pact actually make us safer? So, Dan, you've told us about this new fleet of nuclear submarines. It's cutting-edge technology, and depending on which of the two superpowers you ask, it's either a source of stability in Asia or a major provocation. Is this going to set off a new arms race?
Well, bear in mind, it'd be a bit of a slow-motion arms race because these things will take... You know, we're talking about a renewal of a submarine capability that could come on stream into the 2040s, yeah? So, in one sense... Yes, there's a lot of excitement and noise around this deal, and rightly so, because it is a step change in technology, but it will play out very slowly. As for a new arms race, well, in a way, well, yes, the arms race is already going on. You know, China and the US have been engaged in something of a naval arms race, and there's a growing belief in Western circles that big, powerful countries want to have large navies, that if you are an economic top dog in the world, you will want to expand your naval capacity, and people need to step up to that. Britain's been upgrading its navy, for example. It's put at sea two new aircraft carriers. You know, this arms race has already got going, and it's clearly going to keep going.
You said Beijing has called this alliance the product of a Cold War mentality. Is it fair to say this is starting a new Cold War?
I think it is a bit strong to call it a new Cold War, just because, you know, let's cast our minds back to, you know, what happened in the Cold War. There were often feelings of imminence that it could be that there could be an invasion, perhaps by the Soviet Union of Europe. There were crises like the Cuban Missile Crisis. The level of tension, I think, was much higher. There were conflicts all around the world, covertly backed by the Soviets, you know, the CIA. So, you know, Afghanistan in the 1980s, for example. So it was operating at a much higher level of tension than this. You know, there clearly are tensions. There are a lot of tensions around Taiwan, in particular. But it's not quite. I think it's not yet quite at the same level where we're seeing proxy wars. You know, a feeling of imminence, even a feeling of dread that I think we all had. You know, those of us a certain age had when we were growing up that there could be a war around the corner. Could it deteriorate to the point where it becomes such a thing? Yeah, possibly. You know, we're on a journey here, it seems to me, and we're not on a journey that is taking us in a more peaceful direction.
And the deal came as a surprise to people in Australia, the UK and the US. It seems a little extraordinary that something with such huge potential implications would not come about as a result of some sort of consultation with the public. Has there been any backlash in the three countries involved?
I think that there are clearly a lot of concerns. The submarine is going to be built in Adelaide, so there are reasonable concerns in Australia, not just you know, around, you know, not just in Adelaide, but in the country as a whole, reasonable environmental concerns, you know, how will the nuclear reactors be handled, treated, dealt with? How will they be decommissioned? I mean, it's a question for many years time, but you know, all these things are reasonable questions. You know, there have been occasional accidents involving nuclear submarines, mostly involving Russian ones, but I think there are two US nuclear powered subs still at the bottom of the ocean deck from, you know, accidents that happened many years ago, tragically killed their crew. So I think in Britain there's more of a concern about what else could this lead to. Okay, we've got we're part of this three-way agreement. It could be good for jobs in Britain. No one can argue with that. But yeah, look, there's no shortage of backlash and anxiety. But yeah, the country's going to, again, you know, the three countries are going to power through it. And there are, and I think particularly in conservative political circles, you know, in all three countries, this is a popular agreement. You know, an Anglosphere tie-up is always popular.
You talked about this as a kind of journey, and it seems that there was another way this journey could have played out, which is that China grows more powerful, flexes its muscles, and the world more or less tries to accommodate its influence and make the best of it. This deal puts us on another path, which is that Australia and the UK are now enlisted in this US mission of actively trying to push China back. And I'm wondering, are we really safer as a result of this deal, or does it actually make conflict more likely?
I think that's a very interesting question. And I think you could probably argue, and you could argue it both ways. I mean, look, instinctively, I think that my feeling is that ultimately, although it sounds dramatic, nuclear-powered submarines, right? The word nuclear takes it to a different phase. I think this is really just a sort of technological step change. And I think it's not completely unreasonable for a country like Australia and, you know, any number of other countries, perhaps, to have some access to that technology. In and of itself, it doesn't, I think, make any conflict more likely. But clearly, this path of perpetual military upgrading and antagonism towards China, even if it's softly stated or not publicly stated, you know, will create problems. But what's the alternative? The alternative is to let your military's capability degrade and rot. You know, I don't think that's not an attractive alternative for, you know, any politician, because you never know what's going to happen around the corner. And although these discussions can feel very, you know, sitting in the comfort of one's living room, having a cup of coffee in a cafe, these conversations can feel very abstract and a bit weird. I think you do need to keep upgrading your military technology. It's sort of fundamental to your standing and status as a nation. And every country is going to want to do that, regardless of whether that creates a slightly more tense dynamic with the neighbours.
Dan Sabber, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Dan Sabber, The Guardian's defence and security editor. You can read more about tensions in the Indo-Pacific in a special series of reports right now at theguardian.com. It started yesterday with an exclusive interview with Japan's defence minister, urging European countries to speak out on Chinese aggression in the region. That is all for today. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Casson. Sound design by Rudy Zigadlo. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. Back Wednesday.
This is The Guardian.